And it's 34 past the hour. Welcome back to the final half hour of Across America here. Glad to have you with us. Our next guest is somebody that I knew of long before I came here to Cheyenne. He ran for Congress in Missouri back, I believe it was during 2000, against Dickey Gephardt. He is a prolific author, as I have found out and did not realize. Matter of fact, I have one of his books. It's called The American Minute, and it's basically a daily log of 365 days of different quotes and things that happened historically, things that were quoted here in America. And I would like to welcome our next guest, Mr. Bill Federer. Welcome to Across America.
Gary, great to be with you.
Hey, it's glad to have you, Bill, and good to be able to talk to you after all these years. You did not win in the election there in Missouri, as much as we would have liked for you to have won against Dick Gephardt. He was a very liberal representative there in Missouri. But we're finding here in 2011, boy, you sure have written a lot of books. And I guess one of the things that you felt like we needed to know was 101 things you didn't know about Texas. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, taxes, when we look at one of the reasons that America broke from Britain, is we didn't like to be taxed. There was the French and Indian War, and the British won, and the British decided to keep troops on American soil just in case, and there were no barracks, and so they would put the soldiers in the people's homes. And so they'd come up to your door and say, hey, we're going to live here, and you can live in the attic or the garage. And the people didn't like that, and so they had a mob gather in Boston, and the British fired into the mob, killing a bunch, and it's called the Boston Massacre. And the British also had taxes, the tea tax, the salt tax, the sugar tax, the intolerable acts, and we had no representative in Parliament. So it was just this big government way far away that was pushing through these taxes, and we had no say. So one of the reasons listed in the Declaration of Independence of why we were rebelling against the king was this taxation without representation. And to show we didn't like taxes, when we wrote our Constitution, we forbade the federal government from having an income tax. That's right, Article 1, Section 9 of the U.S. Constitution. And so people say, well, how did the federal government support itself? Well, through two taxes, excise taxes on specific things like salt, tea, tobacco, and import taxes called tariffs, where you tax things brought into the country.
Right.
And anyway, the real there's three reasons for taxes. The first was to pay for a navy, to secure the common defense, guard the borders, and support our military. And that's what John Adams pushed for. There were two groups of people. There were the Federalists that were in favor of a stronger central government, and the Anti-Federalists that did not like a strong central government because they were afraid we'd have a repeat of King George III, where the king was the commander of the country and the head of their church, you know. And so we had no income tax until the Civil War. Lincoln pushed an emergency income tax through to raise $750 million to pay for the war. It was repealed in 1873, and so no income tax again until 1892. The Supreme Court, though, declared it unconstitutional. It said any legislation that discriminates based on race, religion, or economic status is class legislation and leads to abuses. So it was declared unconstitutional, so no income tax again until 1913, Woodrow Wilson. And the first income tax was originally a 1% tax on the top 1% richest people in the country. It was never imagined that we'd tax you and me, just those robber barons, those Rockefellers, Carnegies, you know, the George Soroses of the day. And but World War I started, and everybody said, well, we had an income tax during the Civil War. I guess it's okay to have one during World War I. It was reduced after the war, though not repealed, and then it was Franklin Roosevelt that extended the income tax to most of the country. And he raised taxes so much that it began a thing called outsourcing. That to avoid the tax, we rebuilt Germany and Japan with the Marshall Plan, and a bunch of our businessmen said, hey, well, we can build factories really good in other countries. And so that's when this outsourcing began, and as it kept growing, it got to the place where we are today, where in the global market, you either have to go out of the country or out of business.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's totally gotten out of hand now, and a lot of people kind of sort of look to Woodrow Wilson as to why things are out of control, as well as FDR. And then, of course, we had President Johnson, and some of these other socialized programs that they put in, incorporated, which really caused a lot of burden on our country. And there's really no way to turn the clock back, I don't think. Bill, are you optimistic about what the Republicans are doing in Congress right now? It seems like they've already, as Dracula would shake in the presence of a cross, have already shaken in the midst of potential media coverage, good or bad, when they went up and had that summit with the president and as well as the House Majority Leader, as well as the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid. What's your take on that? Do you think that was pretty much a bad deal? You think that's instilled confidence about taxes actually being rolled back and cuts and the debt ceiling being lowered after that, Bill?
Oh, it's we're in a pickle, that's for sure. You know, I've identified five things that drive jobs out of the country.
Okay.
One is the high taxes. The second is the lawsuits. The third is the wages. You have to face it, you know, higher union wages here and cheaper wages over there. The fourth is all the environmentalism. Instead of giving a an incentive to businesses, you know, the punishment, and, gee, I guess Shell Oil was turned down from, you know, drilling in Alaska out of this, you know, EPA board. But anyway, that drives business out. And then the last is the government regulations, which mostly hit small businesses. When you have a new form to fill out, a mom-and-pop business, it's like, well, how do you fill this thing out? You got to take hours away from making your business work to figure out how to fill out this form and do the record keeping. It's easy to turn the situation around. You simply have to make it more profitable to have your business located here than there. I don't know if the political will there is, because now so many people are dependent on the government. That's sort of the tipping point. If more people are getting handouts and they're voters, they're going to continue to vote for handouts. And that's sort of how Rome fell.
We could talk about that all day long, because history repeats itself, doesn't it, Bill?
It does. One guy, Andrew Jackson, he's an interesting president. In 1836, he said this: Congress is only authorized to levy taxes to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and the general welfare. There is no provision that would authorize Congress to collect together the property of the country under the name of revenue for the purpose of dividing it equally or unequally amongst the states or the people. Indeed, it is not probable that such an idea ever occurred to the states when they adopted the Constitution. So when the different states ratified the Constitution, he says it never went into their brain that the federal government would take away their money and then give it back as the federal government. You know, the old saying, whoever controls the purse strings has the power. So if I collect everybody's money and put it in a big bag and I sit on top of the bag, you've got to come and beg to get your own money back. And so I'm in power using your money to do it. And but one of the things I found interesting was John F. Kennedy's tax plan. And John F. Kennedy said that the quickest way to turn everything around was across-the-board tax cut. He says a tax cut, and this is 1963, Kennedy said a tax cut means higher family income and higher business profits and a balanced federal budget. Every taxpayer in his family will have more money left over after taxes for a new car, a new home, new convenience, education, and investment. Every businessman can keep a higher percentage of his profits in his cash register or put it to work expanding and improving his business. And as the national income grows, the federal government will ultimately end up with more revenue. And so it's this idea that if you cut taxes, people have more money, they'll spend it, and the businesses will have to hire more workers to increase the new demand, and so it'll help everybody. So the John F. Kennedy stimulus plan was not higher taxes, it was lower taxes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're talking with Bill Federer. He's author of American Minute. We're talking about 101 things that you didn't know about taxes. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Bill Federer right here on Across America with Gary Freeman. We'll be back right after these messages. And it's 48 past the hour. Welcome back to Across America with Gary Freeman. Getting ready to wrap up the program for another Saturday just before Mother's Day. Once again, happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. We've been talking with author of The American Minute. Some of you may have gotten that book, Bill Federer. Welcome back to Across America.
Gary, great to be with you.
So what are some other things maybe that we need to know about taxes? We were talking before the break a little bit about What's the kind of feel that you're getting across America concerning this last quote-unquote deal?
Well, the more we stand back from the tree and look at the forest, we can see the trouble that we're in. In the last 30 years, America has gone from the largest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation. We are the most in-debt nation in world history.
It's embarrassing to me.
And, you know, Karl Marx said the way to get rid of capitalism is to get rid of capital. And when you get to the place where nobody wants to buy your debt, China doesn't want it, Japan certainly isn't in a place to buy any more of our debt, then the only thing the government can do is to print more of our own dollars and buy our own debt, which means that every time they double the money supply, what you have in savings is worth half. They double it again, what you have is worth a quarter. And pretty soon you're not going to have any capital left. An interesting quote by Ben Franklin. He said, "I'm convinced that there's not a king in 100 who would not do what Pharaoh did. First get all the people's money, and then get their cattle and their land, then their children, and then make them slaves forever." He says, "I'm concerned that the government of the United States does not in future days end in a monarchy." And here we have the situation where the government's taken more and more and more, and, you know, one person at the top gets to make the decisions as to what agenda is going to be pushed forward. And so we're moving away from people. You know, capitalism is basically financial democracy. Capitalism is allowing people to become independent, and when they're independent, they can challenge the government. But if the people get their money taken away, they can't challenge the government quite as much. You know, an interesting thing, the three reasons for taxation in our history. One was to pay for legitimate expenses like navies. The second was called economic engineering. Supreme Court Justice John Marshall said the power to tax is the power to destroy. So in other words, you tax what you want to have less of, and you give tax breaks to what you want to have more of. And so at the time, we wanted to have less imports, and so we taxed the imports, making them more expensive. And we gave tax breaks to American factories, letting them be able to sell stuff cheaper. The problem was the taxes that helped the North hurt the South. The South didn't have any factories to protect, and all these tariffs on imported goods, I mean, they had to buy more expensive stuff from Europe or buy more expensive stuff from the North. And so that was some of the animosity that led up to the Civil War. Anyway, after the Civil War, North passed all kinds of tariffs, and it did work, and we had these very successful factories, but it created these things called robber barons, Rockefellers, Carnegies, J. Paul Getty's, the Astors, the Pullman Railroad car companies, and these guys became immensely wealthy. And that's when the third excuse for taxation was sold to us, and that actually started with Karl Marx. He said, "Every man according to his ability, to every man according to his need." And so as the immigrants came over and they worked in the factories, it was the seedbed for a lot of this Marxist ideology of redistributing wealth. And the first attempt was Teddy Roosevelt, and he pushed through the inheritance tax, because only the extreme wealthy had inheritances, and then it was Taft that pushed through the corporate income tax, and finally it was Woodrow Wilson that pushed through the income tax, and we got stuck with it. And it was a little camel's nose under the tent, and now it's expanded, and it's beyond what anybody ever imagined, and it's basically crippling the economy. And that's why I love it in the book. I keep going back to John F. Kennedy's tax plan, and John F. Kennedy over and over again, he said, "Lower every dollar released from taxation that is spent or invested will help create a new job and a new salary." And this is all in the book, The Interesting History of Income Tax. And there's some other interesting things. I don't know how much time I have left.
Well, I want to know is, do you think this is kind of a bank on the educational system across America? I mean, how is it that we could hold these values at one time and now it's you know, just kind of like people are throwing it in the pot? I mean, there's a real fight uphill against this, and I don't think it should be that way. If anything, liberalism should be harder fought than what we're seeing as far as people having an idea of what taxes are and just how detrimental they are.
Well, I finished another book. It's called Change to Chains, a little play on word, Change to Chains, and it's a 6,000-year quest for control. In a nutshell, I go through all 6,000 years of recorded human history. The first civilizations were, you know, around 4,000 B.C., and we're 2,000 A.D. You know, Sargon of Akkadia, Egyptian hieroglyphics, and Sumerian cuneiform. And from that time till now, the most common form of human government is monarchy. They go by different names, kings, czars, sultans, caesars, pharaohs, emperors, but power, like gravity, concentrates into the hands of one person. And there's only about two dozen examples of alternatives to monarchy in all of world history. The Greek city-states, the Roman Republic, Italian city-states, the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, the seven united Dutch Netherlands, and America. And we are the longest-lasting alternative to monarchy in world history. And unfortunately, after every crisis, we see a gradual movement back in the direction of one person getting to call the shots. So when I speak in schools, I'll have the kids hold up a fist in one hand and say concentrated power, and then an open palm with their fingers apart with the other hand and say separated power, and then I go back to the fist. I said, that's world history. Most of world history, power is in the hands of kings. You know, that Lord of the Rings, everybody wanted that ring of power.
Right.
And then, we took a power of a king, separated it into three branches, separated it federal to state level, and then we tied up this new federal Frankenstein with 10 handcuffs we call the first 10 amendments, right? The whole idea was to prevent the accumulating of power. Well, after every crisis, like, it was great that Lincoln ended slavery, but in the process, a lot of rights went from the states to the federal government. And Woodrow Wilson got us through World War I, but he concentrated power with the Federal Reserve and the income tax.
Mm-hmm.
And then Franklin Roosevelt concentrated power with the New Deal, and Lyndon Johnson with his war on poverty, welfare state. And then even Bush with so the government can read your emails and track your credit card purchases. But now all that concentrated power has been given to a new president, put on an exponential curve, taking over banks, car companies, and life and death health care decisions of every citizen. No matter what title you use, whether prince or president, he who dictates is effectively the dictator. So if you don't care what the will of the people is and you're going to shove your agenda through and twist arms, we've changed our form of government. It's no longer the government of the people, by the people, for the people.
Well, I think the vibe that a lot of people get, Bill, is that I don't think the president and some people in Congress and maybe even the judicial realize they are co-equal government. The president is not above the law, or is not to be above a judicial decision. We saw that with the McCain-Feingold decision. You know, here they had passed this, Congress had passed this, basically tying the hands of freedom to be able to put money into whatever campaign you want, and it was a year, couple of years, or whatever it was later on, the high court, the legislative branch of our government, shot it down. I mean, they are co-equal branches, and I think people don't realize that.
Well, you're exactly right, and we need to get common sense. And I keep going back to John F. Kennedy. In 1963, Kennedy said the largest single barrier to full employment is the heavy drag of federal income taxes on private purchasing power, initiative, and incentive. And so, again, you squeeze the sponge, the water goes out. You raise the taxes on those who have the ability to invest and create jobs, and then you scratch your head why they're investing and creating jobs in other countries. And so to turn this around,
we're giving them money to drill off the same coastline that we could be drilling from.
Yeah, that's, I mentioned the monarchs being the typical form of government. A monarchy is what's called the patronage system. If you're friends with the king, you're more equal. If you're not friends with the king, you're less equal. And if you're an enemy of the king, you're dead. It's called treason. And we're sort of moving in that direction where if you're a friend of the president, you get an Obamacare waiver. If you're not a friend of the president, you get your car dealership shut down.
Yeah, exactly.
And so here we see that, $2 billion of our U.S. taxpayer dollars is being lent to Petrobras, the Brazilian oil company, so they can drill. George Soros is the key stockholder in that. We have oil. I mean, $770 million of our tax dollars is going to build mosques in other countries. We're building mosques in 27 countries through Obama and the State Department, Hillary Clinton, to build relationships with these countries. And so it's like, what's this money being spent on that we're going in debt over? And that's why there's a lot of concern in the country right now.
I got you. Well, Bill, if we want to pick up some of your books, what's a website we can go out to check that out?
Oh, thank you, Gary. My website is AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com. And bunch of books and articles, and also they can sign up for that free daily email and get the American Minute sent to them.
Yep, that's actually great. All right, well, Bill Federer, thanks for being on Across America today. We sure do appreciate it. Hope you have a great weekend. Once again, go out to AmericanMinute.com. Check out all the books that he's got out there, great reads, and sign up for the American Minute that you can get on your email every day. Bill Federer, thanks for being on Across America.
Oh, Gary, you're tremendous. Thank you.
All right, sir. And we'll hope to see you again next week. Don't forget to pick up your bottle of Joe B's. Order by phone, 877-300-5632, or go to joebees.com. Tell them you heard it on Across America, and get 7 months' supply plus free shipping for only $99. And if you don't want to do that, you can get 1 month, 2 month, or whatever that increment. Feel better, sleep better. I highly suggest Joe B's. It's great stuff. I've been taking it for a while now. Have a great week, everybody. Happy Mother's Day, everyone. And we'll see you next week here, KGAB.